Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Yes, with my third or fourth cold of the season. For many people, the holiday season is a time of honoring traditions, and those traditions can be handed down from family, adapted from celebrations in other countries, or ones that we start ourselves. When we get together with family and friends, we're likely to share our memories of previous holiday gatherings. Perhaps it's a time to remember those no longer with us, or a special gift we received, or even to recount events that seemed climatic at the time, but the dog ate the prime rib dinner, and now it makes us laugh. Today we're sharing stories of the holiday season. We'd like to hear from you. What are some of your favorite memories and stories of holidays past? We hope you'll join the conversation by calling 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Joining us in studio this hour is Lindsay Lee. She's the oral historian and curator at the Martha's Vineyard Museum and the editor of three volumes of Vineyard Voices, Words, Voices, and Faces of Island People. Welcome back. It's good to see you.
It's great to be here. It always is.
So, Lindsay, you've been collecting these oral histories of vineyard residents for decades now. And as we'll hear over the course of the hour, stories and memories of the holidays are often part of your conversations with people. Why do you think holiday traditions stand out in people's memories?
I think it's when family gathers. And as you said, it's time we remember people who are no longer with us. It's a hectic time, but hopefully it's a time for some people to find peace and be reflective. And I think all of these things come together. It also can be a very unhappy time for some people. All those things are very powerful memories.
Yeah. So we're going to get started right away with, tell us what we're going to hear here. This is about a Santa Claus?
This is Helen Isaacson, who unfortunately is, some of the people you'll hear from are still with us, some are not. Helen Isaacson is talking about her husband, Bernie Isaacson, playing Santa at Brickman's store. Bernie was a leader at the Hebrew Center on Martha's Vineyard. And Brickman's was the store started by one of the first Jewish families to come to the island. So it's a wonderful mixture of cultures.
There were, for Christmas promotions, this would have been when Judy was really a little girl. Bernie played for the Christmas promotion. He would be Brickman's Santa Claus. He didn't need any stuffing. So they'd get him down there, and they'd put the makeup on him, and then they'd have him way at the back of the store where the shoe department is, and sitting in a sleigh and so on. And there was a Hanukkah party at the Hebrew Center, and so I had her at the party, and he was doing his Santa Claus bit, but Dick Clark had picked him up. He must have gotten dressed here, and Dick picked him up and took him to the store because, he wouldn't have walked the street as Santa Claus. And I was not home, and I had locked both doors. So all of a sudden, I get a call. Please come home. I'm locked out. Because I can't. He didn't have any pockets in his Santa Claus suit. He had no keys. And I had locked both doors. I didn't know what time he was going to be through. Dick, I guess, must have dropped him off here at the house and left. He figured he'd just go in. He was at home. And next door, our neighbors were the DeGolliers, Ralph and Marianne. They were not the friendliest of neighbors. He had been ill. And so when he went next door and he knocked on the door, here is full regalia, Santa Claus. And Ralph came to the door, and he had been so ill. And he looked at him, and he just cracked up laughing. He wanted to use their phone. That's where he called me from. So he said, that's the best laugh I've had. And from that time on, we were good friends. He said he thought it was an apparition. It was really funny.
Santa knocking on your door. I was just thinking of the phone call to, the police station. Santa's breaking in. He's not using the chimney.
A lot of fun. And I love Helen's laugh.
Yeah.
Infectious. Wonderful cackle. Yeah.
All right, next we're talking Christmas caroling, of course, which is very popular this time of year.
On the vineyard and probably other communities, there was always a tradition among the Portuguese community of going caroling from door to door on Christmas Eve and sometimes to the wee hours of Christmas morning. And this is Mary Drewin, who's talking about that tradition. She talks about how she played the dancing dolls, which are, she describes them a bit. We now have the dancing dolls at the Martha's Vineyard Museum, so you should come by and see them.
That's the night of caroling was on Christmas Eve. Well, it started really with my father and my uncle John Gattino. He played the violin, and Lester Perry from Oak Bluffs played the guitar. And my father used to be the lead singer. And they just take the horse and wagon and go up to Tulane Farm and sing at the doors up there. And give all those farmers all a good time. They really had a ball. After my Uncle John died, my cousin Frankie took over the violin. My brother Louis plays the guitar, and John played a guitar. And, of course, I had my dancing dolls that they brought from Portugal. Here's how you play them.
O senhor, don desta casa, faz a favor, abra porta.
I was a singer. I sang at the door. We would start off when it starts getting dark, and we'd go from house to house walking. We sing the song, we call it abra porta, it means open the door in Portuguese.
A gente vem desta casa, faz a favor, abra porta. Please, would you open the door?
We want to bring you greetings from the baby Jesus. Because everybody on the island in the winter holidays had creches. They have a little manger set. They have the baby Jesus, and they have little plants on it, and they have fruits on it. Some are very pretty. They set them like in the corner, and they have like stairways, and every step there's plants there. That it's a kind of a wheat that they grow in a glass. It's so pretty. And then they have fruits, nuts, and things, anything that's edible, you know, for the baby Jesus.
Well, we get in there and everybody goes, they got to wish a Merry Christmas. They got to have a drink first. All kinds of goodies to eat. If you wanted coffee, they always had that ready for you. That was nice, too, because no one got drunk.
And then we had the other songs that we sang in Portuguese. And then we used to do the chamri and the dancing. And then we'll sing this song. A gente comeu, a gente bebeu na sua casa. We ate, we drank, we did all these things at your home. And now we're about to ready to leave. And thank you for being kind to us. It was tiring walking all that time, but we'd do it. We got to the last house 3-4 o'clock in the morning, you know. My dancing dolls.
This is what they look like, see?
There's two rows of dancing dolls. A little boy doll, a little girl doll. 11 little figures there.
The little bells here.
Then they have the castanets. Little metal caps. They make music. It makes a good ding-a-ling-ling, you know. Especially when you hear the violin and the guitar going.
Go along with the beat.
It's a lot of fun. It's a shame that it's just the kids just don't take it up and continue with it. We used to have a lot of good times.
How much fun to open up your door, and although I'm not sure I'd like that at 3 a.m, but earlier in the evening would be great.
I think people expected them, people in the Portuguese community knew they were going to come to their house, and
what
they were
fun.
Waiting, even at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. We'd love to hear your stories of traditions of the holidays, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have an email from a listener in Falmouth that says, my sister and father-in-law are both artists. One Christmas, they teamed up to make an elaborate gingerbread house. They spent an entire day drawing architectural plans and cutting paper patterns for the structural pieces. The next day, they made the gingerbread dough, cut the dough using the patterns, and baked the pieces. Running out of counter space in the kitchen, they left dozens of baked pieces on windowsills throughout the house to cool while they shopped for the candy decorations. When they came back home, there wasn't a piece of gingerbread to be found. Goose, their black lab, was on his bed and refused to look at anyone. I don't think they ever attempted to make a gingerbread house again. That was the mistake. They should have shopped for the candy decorations before.
Or put it someplace where your black lab can't get to.
There's not a lot of places that those dog can't get to. Yeah, we'd love to hear your stories, your memories of holidays, good or bad. What have we got next here?
Next, we're hearing a story from Everett Poole, who is Chilmark Town moderator, and many of you know of Poole's Fish Market in Menempsha. This is a story of his Christmas when he was a boy.
I remember when electricity was coming to Menempsha, the electricity came up the South Road. We didn't have electricity on the North Road for a long while after that, but it came up the South Road, and I would be coming home from grammar school every day counting the poles to see how close they were getting to my house, because the Christmas before, knowing we were going to get electricity. I had saved my money until I had $12 to buy a Marx electric train, and which was still sitting in the box waiting for the electricity to come.
So did you get it in time for that next Christmas?
Oh, yeah. For the next Christmas, I was able to run the train. It could have been 42, but it was more like 39 or 40, I think.
And, you know, it's interesting, on the vineyard, electricity didn't come to towns up island until, you know, late in the 40s.
And how do you get people to tell you these stories? You get so much great sound with these interviews. Do you just let people kind of talk, or do you ask questions? How does that work?
I ask questions. I always have pages of questions that I'm going to ask because I've done my research before, and then I might follow them or not. I just wait and see what people tell me. Then you have to think on your feet too. You know what it's like to interview.
Oh yeah. But I mean, like with something like this, did you know this story about the waiting for the electricity, or that just kind of came out?
Just kind of came out.
Yeah. So you get lots of surprises.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
Right, so I guess we're having some problem with that one. So we'll move on.
Okay.
All right. Next, we've got, what's our next one that we're talking about?
Next one is Gladys Wittes, a Wampanoag from Gayhead, Aquinnah. And she's was one of the tribal elders. She was a magnificent potter. She made pots from, one of the few people who was allowed to make pots from the clay from the Gayhead Cliffs. When it came to be Christmas time, what would happen?
When I first remember, we always had a Christmas tree in the church. And people would bring presents for each other. Most of them, they were homemade, you know, they'd make aprons and they'd make hankies and carve paddles and stuff like that. Of course, cook food, people that like to cook and could afford the ingredients.
And the tree of the church, was that where everyone gave their presents? Would you do that at home or just do it at the church?
Depend on how much money you had. If you could afford two, then you did. But the main one was at church until everybody got more affluent. Oh yeah, we always had service Christmas Eve. And the tree, they always went out and cut one and brought it in. And then we decorated with cranberries from Cranberry Day. Popcorn. We always had popcorn. And we always had a pageant or a cantata or something like that at church. Yeah. Mm.
Love to hear your memories. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. People know those little vignettes that we play. We call them sonic IDs. And I think Amy's pulled a couple for the show this morning. So let's take a listen to this one. This one's called Chimney Sweep.
We're just getting this chimney swept up a little bit better and the smoke chamber cleaned. They'll have a nice fireplace for the holidays anyways.
Chimney Sweep, Jeff Gonsalves of Harwich.
There's that thing about believing in Santa Claus, and what Dan and I do is we have a old red sweep glove. It's all sooty, so we stick it on the brush, and when the kids are in there, oh, look what we just pulled out of the chimney. And the kid that may not be a believer, it's funny to watch their eyes open right up, and all of a sudden, there is a Santa Claus.
That's funny. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're talking holiday traditions, and we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are sharing holiday stories this hour. We'd like to hear from you. What are some of your favorite memories and stories of holidays past? We hope you'll join the conversation by calling 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. In studio with us is Lindsay Lee. She's the oral historian curator at the Martha's Vineyard Museum and editor of 3 volumes of Vineyard Voices, Words, Voices, and Faces of Island People. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Flying Santa. We don't have Flying Santa anymore, but this is a great story. Tell us a little bit about Flying Santa.
This is Seaman Ponsert Roberts, who is the daughter of a lighthouse keeper, talking about Edward Rowe Snow, the historian, who had a tradition for many years of flying in his airplane and delivering presents to the children of lighthouse keepers.
You know about the flying Santa, huh? Well, he was my Santa. I felt I owned this guy. When Ed Snow had first started doing this, we were some of the first recipients. We were over at Cutty Hunk. And my mother read in the paper that there was this flying Santa Claus, and he dropped toys and stuff to the lighthouse kids and stuff for the keepers. So she wrote him and said, you know, my little girl and everything, and would you drop her a doll? At the time, I had like two dolls. I had this terrible old red-haired doll that the scalp was falling off of and everything, and I had this other doll. And when my mother said, got a flying Santa Claus coming, and he's going to come over in a plane and throw you a present, he wrote me and said he would bring you a doll. Well, this was about like November. So every single day, every time I saw a plane, I thought, oh, is that it? Is that it? And, you know, I'm sure my parents were sorry they told me. So when the big day arrived, Cutty Hunk is loaded with boulders on the west end of the island. So he came and he flew over and he circled and everything, and everybody's excited. And it was my mother and my father and my sister and brother-in-law and a couple of the Coast Guard guys were there. So we were all going to look for the package because he told us to be alert. He'd drop a couple of packages, and sometimes they fall in crevices or out in the sea. Well, the first package did fall in the pond. So my father rode out and got it. So he made another circle, which meant number two's coming down. So it landed on the land, but it landed on the boulder. Well, we all waved goodbye to him, you know, get in the house and everything. And we opened it up, had all this stuff in there, books, newspapers, and cigars and cigarettes and candy. And in this one package, the one that fell on the rock, was my doll. And to top it off, it was a little black doll. Well, I was fascinated. I had never even seen a black person at this time. And here was this little black doll, all broken to pieces. And I said, that's my doll? That's my doll? And I said, look at it. I said, it's in pieces. So I cried myself to sleep that night, and Dad said, don't worry, Simon, don't worry, I'll fix it up. Well, he wired it back together, and I had this doll for years. And I remember when the eyeballs fell out, and Dad put one of these little seashells in it and painted an eye on it, and it looked cross-eyed. This doll was so decrepit, but, you know, I loved it because it was a special present, and I always kept a Band-Aid on its head. It was so broken up and everything. So anyway, my mother, being like she was, she wrote him and she said, oh, thank you so much. Everything was so nice. But Simon just cried herself to sleep that night because the little doll was broken, but Dad's fixed it up the best you can and everything. So that was in 1945. Well, the next year, we were at West Chop. And so he wrote back to Mom and he says, don't worry, I'm going to land this little girl a doll in person. He got a helicopter and he landed up at Gay Head. And he did the same thing the next year, only he landed at West Chop the next year. Well, every year after that, he would come to the Martha's Vineyard Airport. And of course, he came not just for me, but I felt like it was just for me. And he had a wonderful way about him. He would make you feel it was just for you. And, you know, he did the same thing for the Gay Head kids. And they felt it was just for them, which was so, so wonderful. This was a gift.
What a magical memory, huh?
I know, yeah. I know. And she's such a wonderful storyteller. Yeah. She's a writer. And
this was a phone interview. Where is she now?
She's down south. She was in New Orleans, mm-hmm. but she got flooded out. So, yeah. But, yeah, so it's done on telephone. That's why there's background static.
And, boy,
but
Dad, pretty clever, the little seashell for the I guess you work with what you have, right?
Right.
All right, well, we have another little sonic ID we'd like to share. This is Ursula, who was wandering around the station many years ago chatting about Santa. Ursula is Steve Junker's daughter. And Samantha Brown from our production partners, Atlantic Public Media, she was quick enough to start her recorder and capture Ursula's thoughts.
Who lives in the North Pole and comes down the chimney every Christmas and leaves presents too and has a beard that matches the snow too? Who? What do you think? And he has a reindeer who has a glowing red nose too. And he has a sleigh that he brings presents in. And he has a bulging big belly. Comes down the chimney and leaves presents and comes every Christmas. And he always goes, ho, ho, ho. Who do you think it could be?
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Why?
Santa Claus is coming to town. Gather round.
Ursula, teenager now. I love those little kids when they talk about the holidays. Yeah, we had one years ago. It was a little girl, I think it was a girl, whose dad worked for UPS. And she said her dad was like a brown, you know, those brown uniforms. So he was like a brown Santa because he brought packages to people every day.
Great.
All right. So, Lindsay, what about you? Do you have a memory from your holiday season that stands out to you?
A couple of memories. My family has, excuse me, this last Friday I went to our 159th. Family Christmas party in Boston. And when I was young, it used to be at my great uncle's house, which was a house right near the public gardens. And there was an elevator that you could run up. You ran by hand up to the fourth floor. So we would run around. You have to be 10 to go to the party. So every year we gather and have been gathering since the 1800s. Not me, but the family.
I was going to say.
And it's wonderful. I mean, it's to see the family and to be together. And now that we're on the vineyard, we're so lucky because my husband and daughter and I go out and cut our Christmas tree, and Christmas always involves a walk on the beach.
Yeah. See, I do a fake tree because I leave my tree up so long that if it were real, it would just probably the little things would fall to the floor. I usually decorate right after Thanksgiving. I mean, Thanksgiving is Thursday. That weekend, you know, we're doing all the Christmas decorations. And this year, we didn't have as much time because Thanksgiving was so late. So I actually, for the first time, put my tree up before Thanksgiving. I know it's bad, but I love to look at it.
I know. It's so nice. We leave ours. We decorate it quite late. And we leave it up, so it does, all the needles do fall off.
Yeah. And, you know, it's some people don't do the tree until Christmas, till today, Christmas Eve. And I was thinking, but I like to have it for longer, and I don't take it down until the new year, you know, so that we can take it, you know, get a good look at it and get to enjoy all of those decorations. 866-999-4626 is our number for your holiday memories or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You know, we always want Christmas dinner or Christmas Eve dinner to be like this perfect thing, right? And you know, you stress over that. And really, when something goes wrong, You do laugh about it later, but at the time you're so stressed. And I've probably told this story before, but my brother one Thanksgiving decided he was going to do the turkey in a deep fryer in the driveway. And he had never done this before, which is why he burned that turkey to a crisp. So they had no turkey, nothing's open. But my sister-in-law, I thought she was very clever. She cut a picture of a turkey out of a magazine. She put that in the middle of the table and they ate everything else around it. So she said, I'm not going to let that ruin my day.
Exactly. And what a great memory that is.
Yeah, exactly. We still laugh about it. All right, what have we got next in your catalog?
Well,
here?
Next we are hearing from Alajo Falcao and talking about his Christmases in Rio. He came to the island, moved to the island in 1996, and now has a family and is very active in the vineyard community.
You know, Santa Claus comes from North Pole, you know, and he wears that big red suit and the hat and everything. And you think he wouldn't last 2 seconds in Rio, you know. But still, our Santa Claus looked like that. Our Santa Claus wore the hat and he wore the suit and, you know, he had the reindeer. And the Christmas trees were pine trees. Just like here, you know, like these, the trees that you guys decorate. But obviously we had the fake trees, and we had, my mom, I remember one Christmas, well, more than once it happened, she bought this spray that we would spray the tree so we would look like snow. Mom, you know, we don't have snow, but it never occurred to me that it just, this is what a Christmas tree is supposed to look like. Yeah, it was always like that. The cool thing though, was our house in Rio. We have this, I don't know how you would call that tree in English, but translating roughly, it would be like a midget palm tree, which was just like a regular palm tree, but it was tiny. You know, the trunk was just probably 3.5 feet tall. And then you get all the leaves, you know, like, and it's a beautiful, beautiful tree. And it's right in our front yard, actually. It's still there. So even though we had, you know, the fake tree inside the house with the lights and everything, we would always decorate that outside. So we would hang the lights on that. So it would look pretty cool, you know. And it was more of a Brazilian Christmas tree because there's palm trees everywhere. People decorate the houses and the, you know, the fronts of the houses and everything. So it looks pretty. It's just not the Christmas that it doesn't look like the Christmas that it's supposed to look like. Like here, you know, we don't have the snow. We don't have the, you know, but we still have the decorations, you know. It's kind of an imitation. Same thing as here, you know. We'd have the little the Christmas tree in the house, and we'd go to bed as kids, and my mom and my dad would put the presents after we fell asleep, you know. So we would.
Stockings?
No, we didn't do that. And obviously, we didn't have a chimney.
Right.
So I think my mom and my dad used to tell us that they would leave the door unlocked so Santa could come in and leave our presents. And yeah, but, you know, we were fortunate. I mean, we were never rich, you know, but. I mean, my dad was always, he still is, a hardworking man, and he made sure that we had our little presents under the tree every year.
Mm. Yeah, you know, you think about that. You got to work with what you have, right? So if you got palm trees, then that's exactly. The tree you use. Yeah.
Exactly. It sounds beautiful to me.
Yeah, yeah. There was one Christmas that we did spend in Florida, and that's exactly what we didn't have a Christmas tree. We decorated a palm tree, yeah.
But it's interesting that idea of what Christmas is supposed to look like,
right,
travels down to or travels around the world, this kind of archetypal,
yeah,
Christmas.
And clever, like, what, well, there's no chimney, how is Santa going to get in, right?
Very clever.
I guess you have to come through the door, right? 866-999-4626. We are talking about holiday season stories. We hope you'll share a story with us. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And, of course, this is a season not just of Christmas, but Hanukkah. And that's our next bit of sound is about Hanukkah.
Yeah, this is from Ruthie Stiller, who was a daughter of Sam Kronig, the first Jewish family to come to the Vineyard. They started Kronig's Market, which still is the biggest store in Martha's Vineyard. She's talking about some of the kind of mixed blessings of and pain of Christmas and Hanukkah.
The one thing I do remember about being Jewish as a third grade teacher, we had Miss Merrill. She said, now write down everything you got for Christmas, everything. Write me a list. You know, she was never enthusiastic about it. Just write down everything. Well, I didn't get anything. I didn't even know what it meant. So I wrote down everything I ever got in my whole life, which wasn't a big list. But if that's what she wanted, I would do it. Sure.
Did you feel strange that your family didn't celebrate Christmas?
No, it didn't bother me. We didn't celebrate anything. One year, my Uncle Henry, who was a sweetheart, he was the sweetest man on earth, gave me a nickel, and I was flabbergasted. I didn't know why I would deserve a nickel, but it was great. You could buy something with a nickel, but we didn't exchange presents. It wasn't common. My mother lit candles, and that was as far as we went. When I got married, I wanted my kids to have presents, so we got to doing it ourselves. One night, they'd get a pair of mittens, things that they needed. One night a hat, you know, another night some underwear, but they were thrilled no matter what it was because they too never had much in their pocket. But we never did that.
So
if we needed clothes, we got clothes. Yeah.
You didn't feel...
I didn't feel left out.
When other kids were getting Christmas presents?
We had vacation. We didn't talk about it. And they didn't get that much. It was the Depression. Let's face it, they didn't get that much either. I think mittens, handmade mittens was a big deal. People didn't get gold carts and things like that or big presents. We were all in the same boat. The Depression hit everybody. And we were lucky because we had plenty of food. And my father made a living, which a lot of them didn't. That depression was pretty darn tough.
Yeah.
That's Ruthie always had this, was able to turn everything positive.
Oh,
it's wonderful.
I love that. All right, let's talk to Eileen, who's giving us a call from Chatham. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, Mindy. Welcome to the cold.
I know.
Listen, this is a little bit of the past and a little of the present. I'm a bit of a fanatic about my Christmas tree. I have over 400 ornaments on it, and it revolves.
Wow.
And I've collected these ornaments ever since I was a kid. And but the story being that no one else can decorate the tree, and that, of course, will backfire on you when you're so tired you can't lift your finger. But the ornaments mean so much to me. And I never forget, we moved into our new house many, many, many years ago. And movers put all of our stuff in the house and ended up with the ornaments being tucked in a corner of the garage, which was at ground level. So you can probably know what's coming there. Mm. We had a heavy rain, went down the hill into the garage. And a little bit later, my former husband went down there and he came back upstairs. And I was doing something with the kids and he sat down, which was in the old days. And he said, listen, I'm going to tell you something and it's not going to make you happy. And this was a man who wasn't always, in, you know, sensitive to my feelings. And he said, but all your, almost all of your ornaments have been ruined with mildew from the rain that took them. I was frozen. I wanted to cry. I wanted to do something. And he said, but don't forget, you buy new ornaments every year. And I was, you know, it was just, he said, I know how you feel. I know this is really hard for you. And it really was. I mean, every year when I put things out, as new as they are, as old as they are, I always remember that night where he came up and sat down next to me with all of the, whatever he could muster, sympathy, empathy, to let me know how badly he felt about it.
And, you know, I'm thinking the same thing. Oh, no. That mildew is not good. But, you know, and it's not the ornaments that you're upset about. It's the memories. It's the memories that the ornaments meant, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, and my kids remember that I still do two, at least, if not many more, every year, one for each of them, supposedly. So when I was born, there'd be no arguing over dividing them up.
Right, yeah.
But we'll be out tomorrow at Cataldo's in Littleton and hit their 50% off sale tomorrow. Thank you for letting me.
Oh, Eileen, thanks for sharing that with us. We appreciate that. Your tree set 400 ornaments. It must be beautiful.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Go ahead. You want one more thing?
I'll send a video someday. Yes. My cousin and I are notorious for leaving our trees up because we love them so.
Me too.
And one day I found a little kid's book for sale, old one. The year the Christmas tree stayed up all year. And it's the story of a little girl, her toys, and her dog. And when it was time to take it down after Christmas, the dog said, you can't take it down. We've got to leave it up. We have to have a party. And she said, what party? It's over. No, the Happy Valentine's Day party. So the tree was decorated for Valentine's. You get it. And so on and so on and so on. Thanksgiving comes. And she says, no, we're putting it away. And he said, but you can't. Because in whatever, 30 days, Christmas will be here and we need our tree. It's a wonderful book if anybody can find it.
Oh, all right. Eileen, thanks.
For those of us that don't take it down.
Right. Thanks. Right, thanks for sharing the memories with us, Eileen. We appreciate that. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. More memories after a break. You're listening to The Point, and we are sharing holiday stories. We'd like to hear from you. What are some of your favorite memories and stories of holidays past? 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Well, Eileen was just talking about her 400 ornaments on her tree, and it made me think, I have lots of boxes of ornaments, too, and I don't put them all out every year because I change my theme. So this year it happens to be birds. Last year we had the sea, you know, so different, you know, sea creatures and fish and whatever. I have angels, I have snowmen, I have Santa Claus. It's kind of fun to mix it all up every year. All right, Lindsay, what do we got next?
Next is a sonic ID from John Hughes, who was the head of the lobster hatchery on Martha's Vineyard and still going strong, talking about his Christmas during World War II.
One of the interesting things about it was Christmas week, and we were 2 days out of Pearl, and the announcement came over the sound system for all personnel not on duty to report down to the hangar deck. Of course, this is below the flight deck. And we did, and the morale officer had us singing Christmas carols. So there was hundreds of us down there. And when that was over, the elevator that takes the airplanes up and down came down with a fully decorated Christmas tree and a Santa Claus. And everybody got a gift, a razor, a harmonica, or something like that. It's Christmas I'll never forget.
Christmas memories. And Lindsay, we just got an email from Elagio. He says, I just heard my own story about my Christmases as a kid in Rio, and it brightened my Christmas Eve even more as I prepare some of the food for our family feast this evening. Thank you, Lindsay, for the work you do. It's wonderful to hear all these different stories from all over, all walks of life and different generations. Merry Christmas to all. Thanks for that email. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Lajo.
866-999-4626 if you'd like to share a holiday memory with us. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have a little more Christmas caroling.
Yes, this is Alice Catino, who was a music teacher in on the vineyard, talking about the beauty of that tradition of in the Portuguese community of caroling.
At Christmas time, they'd go around singing at the doors and playing these guitars and violins and singing at night, Christmas Eve, and waking people up, and they'd stamp on the porch and play, singing a song in Portuguese, all Portuguese, and say, owner of the house, please open the door to us. And they'd come in, and inside they'd have an altar to Jesus, and wheat growing, and all these decorations, and they'd sing all night. Well, not all night in the same house, but they'd go door to door. And all these people on the island, the Portuguese people, they started in Vineyard Haven. They would be upset if they didn't come to their house. So it got so, after a while, they wanted them all over the island. It would take all night long, so it kind of fell away. But John's family had a big part in that. His father played violin very well, and he had a friend that played the guitar, and they went. The Catinos and the Pivas of Vineyard Haven, they kept that growing for a long time. But then it fell away. The young people didn't take it up. And so I think I have a picture of it somewhere. Yes, it's kind of faded now. But there's my husband with the guitar and his brother with the violin. He took after his father and played violin. And Siggy Piver, who's from Vineyard Haven, and Mary Druin, who is his sister, played these dolls, kept time with it. And they had a group in costume, as you see, that went around, and people looked forward to seeing them every Christmas. And one time they came and woke us up. We didn't go that night. We were getting on in years by that time. And the neighbor told us the next day, I woke up and I heard violins and I thought I was in heaven. They were walking on the snow and playing the music as they went. And when they went into the house, they had refreshments, and they sang all evening. It was beautiful.
What a nice way to be woken up, right?
Exactly.
Let's talk to Julie, who's giving us a call from Nantucket. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Mindy. How are you?
I'm good.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
The first, I'm one of the oldest of a huge family, 11 kids, and my first Christmas away from home was traveling across the United States in 1968 in a school bus with some friends. And we broke down in 13 of the 15 states we went through. Mm-hmm. And on Christmas Day, when we finally made it to the San Diego Mountains, all I could think of was all the brothers and sisters going down the stairs back in New Hampshire, where we lived at the time, and getting their stockings and eating the tangerines and getting ready to go to church, and then coming home and having big Christmas dinner while I'm in a cold bus where nothing worked. And and then my This is not like a really, it's a memorable Christmas, but I'll top it with a little bit of better. But the straw that day was that we got to a place to get food, and my brand new husband came back and brought me a hot dog, and it had onions and ketchup on it, and I burst into tears. I said, I don't even know how to make a hot dog. It's supposed to have mustard and relish. And that was my first one, but it was fine. And the second one, we were in Hawaii, and everything was shaping up, and I had my first little daughter, and I didn't have anything. I wanted a manger, but we were pretty poor, so I bought some, believe it or not, Hawaii was more expensive than Nantucket back then. And I bought some ivory soap, and I carved a manger and put it on top of the piano that was in the apartment we rented. And that was, you know, that was my little Christmas.
Wow,
and then I used a big oriental umbrella as my tree and put a few presents under the oriental umbrella, and then got a package from my dad, and it was a special music box that played Lara's song from Dr. Zhivago. Yes. And it made my Christmas.
Yeah. Julia, I don't think I could carve something out of Barbara. So you've got some talent there. And I think maybe this must have been a thing that parents did, you know, because same thing, we always got a tangerine in our stocking. And my mother was like, well, at least they'll eat something that's good for them before all the candy and everything else that we get.
Right,
Julie, thanks for sharing your memory with us. That's awesome.
Yeah, okay, well, have a great Christmas.
You too. Thanks again. This is something we got here. This is not nice. This is my aunt's neighbor wraps empty boxes and puts them under the tree. He claims if the kids are naughty, he throws one of the fake presents into the fire. That's terrible. I wonder how long it took these kids to figure out that the box was really empty. That's an awful thing to do to kids. And then Diane sent us a note. She says, at 8 years old, I was on the verge of questioning Santa. On Christmas Eve, I got a telegram from Santa telling me I had been a good girl. I think it made for a great Christmas and another year of believing. Yeah, that's like the Polar Express, the book and the film, where you hear that little bell if you believe, right? 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. What do we got next here?
Next we hear from Nayla Silva, who is a member of our wonderful Brazilian community on the Vineyard. And she's talking about her memories of Christmas in
Christmas
Brazil.
Was the biggest holiday. My family will always get together at grandma's house, and right like a day or two before Christmas, that's when the uncles arrived with their families, the ones that lived most far away, and that was at the time there was no electricity, and they'll just like the kids would go swim on the lake or play soccer on the backyard. The older moms and aunts would be cooking, of course. But the one thing that wasn't, there was no exchange of gifts. Like, I probably didn't get a Christmas gift until I probably bought myself one. Or if there was, that would be like an uncle would bring, that would live in the city, would bring a big box of chocolate that would share with all the kids. You know, there were maybe some families that would buy a gift here and there for. But which is another thing that has changed as well, you know? Like when it's around Christmas, my niece and nephew, they're like, what are you going to give me? What are you going to give me? It's not the same anymore. It's all of all the gifts now.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of true, isn't it? The commercialism around the holiday is sort of sad.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have, I guess, one more Sonic that we want to play, Amy? We have a couple, so let's choose one. We're going to let Amy choose which one it's going to be. So here we go.
Box.
The late Sarah Gibbs of Marion.
It was hard cardboard, and it had little divisions inside, so it had a couple of little spools of thread. It had one needle, and it had a thimble that, of course, didn't fit, but nevertheless. Oh, I thought that was the most gorgeous thing I ever had.
All right, so we have a Reverend Francis Sayre here talking. Just tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear here.
The very Reverend Francis Sayre was born in the White House. He was Woodrow Wilson's grandson, and he was dean of the Washington National Cathedral for over 27 years. Came to the Vineyards in the summers, and then he came and settled there in the early 90s. And he was very involved with civil rights and a wonderful man. He had a tradition each year of getting friends to, he would have Christmas cards, very simple Christmas cards that he would have friends do illustrations on. And then he would write a poem. And he's going to read a couple of them.
The illustrations on these cards, this one I'm holding in my hand is a beautiful illustration of a fishing boat. Its name is Jesu, J-E-S-U, and it has a little Christmas tree at the top of its mast and the Star of Bethlehem up in the sky. The artist who did this picture, Chandler Moore, was a very good friend of mine. Was quite a guy. You want me to read the poem on that? It's entitled Jesu. Brave wee ship upon the deep, and tiny child sent to save the world, so small, yet so great. Shine, O Star of God, upon the little bark, and in the hearts of all as we lift our faith to thee this Christmas day. This is a kind of a nice picture. Blow, ye winds of morning, blow, blow, blow. God cleanses, God renews, God comes in many ways, in the turmoil of storm and the quiet peace of Christmas. And here's another one, a little picture at the top, done by a friend of mine, with the Star of Bethlehem in it. So here's the verse. Kindle anew, O Father, the shining light of Christmas, secret in thy mystery, yet radiant in glory, that we may share with thee and with one another the miracle of eternal love. Now, you can see how many Christmas cards I send each year.
225.
Yeah, and that was 1990. But last year I started cutting down. I was only 80 last year. This year it'll be only about 50. So here's the verse. Over the wide sea, through storm or calm, appears the blessed gleam of one tiny light, so small, yet so clear. Above the lonely wave, it is Christ who tugs upon our hearts this wondrous Christmas day. The cover of the buoy was by Virginia Bessie. I feel a little teary reading these things.
Well, they are teary-making. I mean, they're so...
Well, Christmas is, too. But it's joyous-making, but teary, because who are we? We're nothing, but God makes us something, each one different and wonderful.
Reverend Francis Sayre reading from his Christmas cards. We don't get a lot of Christmas cards anymore, do we?
No, we don't, and certainly not ones like those. Yeah, those are so beautiful.
Right.
So.
Lindsay Lee is the oral historian, curator at Martha's Vineyard Museum, editor of three volumes of Vineyard Voices, Words, Voices, and Faces of Island People. We'll put a link with more information about Lindsay Lee's projects at our website, capeandislands.org. Lindsay, thanks for spending Christmas Eve with us. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and to everyone who's listening.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.